All right, guys. So we're gonna try this now. We're gonna see if we can do this. So I'm gonna go 1, 2, 3, and then 1, 2, 3, the wizard. And just fucking go for it. See what happens. No, I'm not gonna attempt to do anything fancy. So, all right. So here we go. 1, 2, 3.
The wizard.
It's September 10th, 2009.
And I'm Nick Brecken.
And this is Idle Thumbs 42.
And I'm Nick Brecken.
And I'm Chris Remo.
And I'm Nick Brecken.
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
And he's Nick Brecken. And we went to PAX.
Yeah, we did.
We went to the Penny Arcade Expo.
Yeah, we saw a lot of Idle Thumbs listeners.
Yeah, we did. That was really cool. We were surprised. As we said during the last episode, we did a meetup for Idle Thumbs listeners. And I guess we didn't really know how many people are going to be there, but I think we guessed it was going to be
like five,
like a dozen maybe.
We
got about a dozen RSVPs, and I was expecting a few people to not show up and then a few other people to not have RSVP'd.
Right.
So I was expecting it to bounce out around 10 to 12. That's kind of what I was thinking.
But some people suggest 40.
Yeah. There are more like 40 people or so who showed up.
Including us, probably.
Right. Which
was a little scary.
It scared the shit out of me.
It was really surprising. Yeah. We didn't expect
I'm easily frightened, apparently, by large groups.
Jake was hilarious. Intimidated by this.
I didn't like it.
No.
It was awesome. It was actually super good, but it was definitely weird walking from the convention center to the bar we were all meeting, and then I would occasionally just sort of peek over my shoulder and in fact confirm for the 80th time that there were 30 people following us.
Right.
Yeah. Like the weird sort of false Pied Piper of video
the train,
games.
Yeah, right. The Thumbs train.
Yeah,
we were the engineers of the Thumbs Express.
I was in the caboose,
which made it much more stressful and horrible when we got to the bar we were going to go, and it was totally full.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like as then, we walked down the stairs
back
to this
train,
venue,
back
yeah,
up
they
the
were
stairs.
Just kind of shaking their heads.
Switch tracks, and
let's keep this train analogy going.
We lucked out to an extraordary degree when
we walked down the
block and the Tap House Grill had an entire party room that was available that they let us just sort of take over, which ended up being great. It was pretty much the perfect size for the group we had. We pretty much filled the whole thing.
Yeah.
And we gave away a bunch of download codes and stuff for games, including... The Puffins game, the much hyped Puffins game, as well as Dirty Dancing, the official PC game.
A new in-box copy which had a GameStop price tag on it for $2.99.
Yep.
$2.99,
on
bracket,
top of
bracket,
another,
new.
Like, right. Handwritten $2.99 price tag.
Right. So that's good.
So that's cool. We met a bunch of dudes. We met a bunch of readers and...
And listeners.
It was really fun. For anyone who came, thanks a lot for showing up. Thanks for putting up with our incompetence at not knowing where to go initially, and thanks for not leaving.
Yep.
Yeah, it was really
fun. And thanks for talking to us about video games for an hour and drinking. Oh, we didn't quite fill the room. There were three people in the very back corner.
Oh, yeah.
And I walked over them.
They came in later. They eventually came in, I think, assuming it was just
I went over there and said, I hope you guys don't mind, but... someone's about to say 1, 2, 3, then the entire room is going to yell the wizard and we're going to put it on tape. And they're like, I don't know what the fuck you just said. Or like, I don't know what the hell. I don't know what the hell you just said to me. And then they all got up and left.
Yeah. It was pretty funny.
But yeah. So.
And there were some.
Yeah,
some
a lot
cool
of heads turned
who,
in the actual bar.
That's because the entire room yelled
watching.
The wizard at full volume. Yeah.
There were some cool dudes who made video games there. There's one guy who made an iPhone game that he was showing called Gunraiser. It's kind of a bullet hell kind of thing. And then there was also that guy worked on like every sort of notable canceled PC game from the 90s, which was kind of unfortunate.
Yeah.
But he was a cool guy. He worked on like Star Trek, what was it? The Secret of Vulcan Wrath or like
right,
the,
yeah.
I remember Vulcan reading Fury about that in Vulcan Fury. Yeah. Like in the 90s and PC Gamer and stuff. There were some other people there who made Soul Survivor, which is a kind of turd defense game for Xbox indie games and PC.
I totally thought you just said turd defense and was really happy.
It's a poo game.
Sorry for bringing that up.
That's
so
okay.
They made a turd defense game.
A tower
game.
Defense, I guess, is the term.
That's a turd defense.
That's coming out for PC and Xbox Live indie games. Maybe you want to check out their game.
You should actually check it out, even though I keep saying turd over the top of this discussion.
Jake is amused by turds.
Subliminal, turd. It's a turd.
So it was cool. So we did that, gave out some games, talked to dudes, hung out for a while. It was really good. We were very surprised. If we ever go to another event ever, we'll probably do something like this again.
Yeah.
If we're all actually there.
Hopefully planned with a little more forethought.
This one worked out pretty well, though. So.
It did.
I wouldn't
want to
rely on that. I've honestly never been more stressed in recent memory.
Trying to collect people. It was just, we didn't really know where people were coming, and so we had to straddle like two elevator or escalators.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
I didn't know if people were going
to
like
recognize us or anything.
On the way
down to the bar, it was like, we are about to be the biggest fucking fuck ups in the world.
Yeah.
We're going to have to tell 40 people who listen to our show that we're idiots and don't know how to do anything.
Right. It was almost which is, it might be evident from our show, but when someone's lives are actually intersected with that, it might be a lot worse.
Yeah. Sometimes we might just waste 40 minutes of your life when you're sitting at work listening to iTunes.
Right. So there's that. That was pretty awesome. Also at PAX, we interviewed some dudes. Those we did three Idle Thumbs interviews in between our actual real jobs, which paid for us to be at PAX and were the bulk of what we were doing. But we did sneak in a couple Idle Thumbs interviews. They're all up on the site. We talked to Ron Gilbert, the creator of Monkey Island and the upcoming Death Bank. That was pretty fun. We interviewed Ron 5 years ago. It was one of the first interviews Idle Thumbs ever ran, a text interview. We should link that. I think it's actually up again.
Yeah,
now.
It's up. We can link it in the blog.
Yeah, we'll link it in the blog. Then we interview, and he's always cool to talk to. He gave the keynote at PAX, and that was really fun. We talked to Chet Falzek, one of the writers at Valve, who's working on Left 4 Dead 2. That guy's really cool. And then we talked to Mac Walters, who's the lead writer on Mass Effect 2, which was sort of complete luck that we'd been talking about Mass Effect for like every week for the past month.
Right.
So we had a lot of extremely specific things to say to that guy.
Both he and the PR rep who was with him were sort of baffled by the amount
Let
us just get into the minutiae of Mass Effect's universe.
Right.
Like, well, it wasn't asked like that, but they seemed to be confused and thought that it was. You might have been going all out, Chris.
I've been playing it so much. Like, it was really weird.
Here's what I think about the tone of this segment. Right. Will this be included in the sequel, Mass Effect 2?
Yeah. So those are all up there. We think we might have accidentally sort of carpet bombed everyone with way too many podcasts right in a row.
Cast overload.
So we're putting this one up a day late to sort of offset that a bit. Also, we were sort of not helped by the fact that podcasts that are way more popular than ours released all their big reunion shows.
Giant Bomb live show.
GFW reunion tour.
Show. Like, what? Okay, well. Idle Thumbs talks to Chet.
Yeah, exactly. So we might have gotten a little buried there, but that's okay. Lesson learned. We might space those out if we ever do anything like that in the future.
We'll be re-releasing those.
Right.
Yeah.
Collector's
as
edition.
Next week's podcast.
Cloth map included. Cool. So that's a recap of stuff we did. What did we actually like play that we can talk about? That's
we played
cool.
video games.
Oh, man, we did. You know what was really cool that was there? Actually, I don't know if people know about this. Shank? It's the upcoming 2D side-scrolly game, probably Xbox Live Arcade, but they haven't said anything yet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They at their booth, they had the Xbox controllers because that was for the demo machine, but in quotes, to keep people from talking about what platform it was on, they also stacked up on the demo machine coming out of their kiosk. They had like a Dreamcast controller, a Atari 2600 controller, just like, please, look at all these other things you could be playing the game
right
on.
It might not be a 360.
Right.
It's a 360. And it's from the guys who made Eats, which I actually talked about on the show a month ago or so. Clay Entertainment. And it's really cool. It's a side-scrolling kind of, I don't know,
it's
Double Dragon inspired thing. But it's all hand-animated really, really nicely, kind of like the Behemoth games, but with a more Cartoon Network style, like a more Adult Swim style look to it.
Yeah, it looks like a combination of like Kim Possible and the Venture Brothers or something like that.
Yeah. That's a good call. And apparently all of the animation staff on the game come from cartoons rather than video games. I guess pretty much everyone at that company is an animator. That's their background.
Yeah, their demo at the show was very much obviously a proof of concept. Like, you just walk through one level and it was, I think, the
boss battle and everything.
Yeah, but I mean, the word sort of at the show was that was basically what the one thing those guys had built. And you could
like
kind
a vertical
of tell.
Slice. Yeah.
But it was really impressive that it's got the knife stuff, or knife sort of melee stuff, guns, and then the chainsaw.
Grenades.
Oh, and grenades. And you can mix and match which one transitions from which and how you sort of combo them together, both in chains. And like, if you're in the air and you do one, then land it to the other one, or if there's a guy on your left or your right, if you're attacking two guys, and they've got all the different animations. Yeah, all the
they're all hand animated.
Yeah, the transitions between all of the any possible state blends really seamlessly, and makes the play control really fun.
It's cool because they're not actually even blended. They literally made a big list.
The different transitions the blends are all hand animated.
Yeah, it's incredibly smooth. It just looks amazing.
It makes you look like a huge badass.
Yeah.
Right. It's definitely one of those games where that's the central fantasy and tenet of the game. But it's really cool. It's really nice to see a game of that style done to such a ridiculously high fidelity, because it's the exact opposite way most games are going, where there's more animation blending now. There's more of that stuff would be done kind of on a seamless basis, but they literally made
nice to see all this keyframe animated
keyframe art. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, they go out of their way to like rub your nose in it. When there's a part where you go out onto this little tiny bridge between two buildings and the sun is setting right behind your character.
Oh, yeah.
So like the scene fakes overexposing and everything goes into silhouette. So then all you're looking at are the 2D animated, like super strong readable silhouettes and motion lines of these characters as you like grab a guy and punch him in the face with a knife and then swing him back and forth over your head. Like, is that Battletoads that did that? Which game was it where you could grab a guy? Oh, it's the Ninja Turtles arcade games, like Turtles in Time, where you grab a guy and then swing him over your shoulders, boom, 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 onto the ground,
Battletoads
left, right?
Yeah, Battletoads did that too. Yeah, yeah, right, yeah.
But just, like, it had that, it's that style of game, but it looks amazing. It's really cool.
Yeah, it really looks awesome.
So we were all psyched by how cool that game looks, and, it was pretty much all about just looking cool and making you look cool. I don't know how challenging the real game is going to be.
It's the kind of game that they could make fucking impossible if they wanted. They could just go
guys on
Contra like craziness. Right. Yeah, and just
I didn't get that sense.
I don't think that's what it's going to be. Yeah. I just mean it's the kind of game where,
but like it has to climb up a wall, you just keep pressing forward, at least in their prototype, and your guy will just sort of grapple up the wall, then eventually start grabbing out picking up his knives automatically and chipping them into the wall to climb up and that sort of thing. So. It's all about just sort of forward momentum and killing people stylishly in 2D.
Yeah. Speaking of games that looked really good, Deskbank actually looked
Deskbank,
really impressive.
Deskbank was nice looking. Those screenshots that came out right before the show were like, what?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Even Hothead said, I was reading their Twitter feed, and they said, based on what every single person at the entire show has said, maybe those screenshots were bad. Because I get the feeling that everyone went to the show and was like, oh, your game actually looks really nice.
Right.
Well, so all you said actually just then.
So much of it is actually, I mean, I know this is such a cliche to say, but
it is emotion. Yeah.
It's so weird that seeing an interactive thing actually moving and interacting with it makes it look better.
Why would that motion?
But yeah.
But I mean, a lot of that is the objects, a lot of the buildings, for example, trees, foliage. Yeah,
just the way they sort of pass by you in the world.
Well, specifically, they're all sprites.
It's all.
And so seeing them still, it does look like a bit of a mismatch. But when you see it in motion, the analogy Ron Gilbert used in our interview was, it's basically like a pop-up book. And that's exactly how it actually feels when you
actually
see
them pop up.
It.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, when they come up over the horizon line, I sort of scroll around and then kind of whoosh past the camera
Animal Crossing style curved world.
Yeah,
it looks great.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I was talking to Ron about that, or about the look of that, and he said that in the engine, it's actually, they just have an internal dial for how curved the world is, and he said they don't. I hope I'm not getting in trouble for talking about this stuff. It sounds like that stuff isn't actually controlled in the game, but when you go inside a dungeon, the world just flattens out. So dungeons don't use the curve stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And you can see that in the gameplay videos if you look for it. But I thought that was a crazy thing to think about, of just, we can just in real time wrap the world around a cylinder.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, it's cool. It looked really interesting.
Yeah.
God, there was a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah.
Torchlight was really nice looking.
PAX is a great show.
I know. But PAX was pretty awesome.
Great.
Torchlight was really nice. That's the game from
Runic
Games, who are comprised of guys from Blizzard North, who worked on Diablo and Diablo 2, like Max Schaefer, for example, and then Travis Baldry, who made Fate, which was, I never actually played it, but a lot of people really liked it. It's one of those Diablo-style games.
Yep.
And Torchlight looks really nice. It's single-player only, and they're going sort of further in the softer direction that Diablo 3 is going. I mean, they're sort of pushing it further in that direction away from Diablo 3, and they've said that's deliberate, to not try to just go up against that behemoth, but I think it looks really nice.
Did you play it at all?
I played it a little bit, but mainly what I did is check out the level editor.
Oh, really?
Which is pretty cool. It's the full scale. I mean, it's not even really just a level editor. It's the actual, all the engine tools they use to make the game. They're just shipping them. It's got everything in there. They've got their own visual scripting language. It's kind of like Kismet in Unreal Engine 3, if anyone's used that, which is like an amazingly good system. I don't know if it's as good as that one, but it looks very similar. You can adjust pretty much any parameter in the game. You can make all your own levels. You can put exits wherever you want, spawn points, all kinds of stuff.
It's the kind of game that has, you know, it's like Diablo 3 in that there is verticality to the levels.
Right.
You can do a lot of things. And there are also triggers, you know, throughout the world. And, you know, just sort of interesting little things.
Yeah, you can do a lot of stuff with triggers in the editor as well.
Yeah. But I mean, as
you
far
can
as
do
how
a lot of stuff with triggers. Fact.
Yeah.
But it's cool. It's really interesting to see someone do that for a game like this, because as far as I know, no one's released an editor that full featured for a game of that style before. And it's the kind of game where it's a less intimidating thing to make levels for, I would think, than some games, just because the whole thing, it is kind of top down. You don't need to make sort of really complex geometry or you know what I mean? It's all, you could just make it all one level and nobody would mind, you know, one vertical plane, and no one would care. So it's cool. I'm interested to see how that works out for them. It's like a $20 download.
Yeah.
So I hope enough people give it a shot.
Cool.
Yeah. Although you don't even need to buy it to use the level editor.
Yeah. If they do well, they're going to do an MMO.
Right. Exactly.
In the same world.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Same world and style of gameplay. What else do we have? God, there's a ridiculous amount of stuff to talk about.
So a billion video games. I mean, do you want to just talk about Left 4 Dead 2 for a sec?
Yeah, sure.
Nick and I played through the PAX demo of Left 4 Dead 2.
We beat the game.
I played through a little bit of it, but these guys played through way more.
I think I'd seen three different groups play through it. Or we were the third group.
We were the only ones that I saw actually
make it all the way to the end. That's not to say that everyone didn't. But
yeah, we were awesome.
We were the fucking best Left 4 Dead 2 players, by which I mean...
It's because we had Jake.
Yeah. Oh, man. I did so well. Man, at the end of we only played through like two safe houses worth of stuff. And in the first one, I fucking blew.
Jake was so afraid to play this game. He was like, he was watching people play it and they were doing fairly well. And he was like, oh, God. Oh, shit. I'm going to be awful. Awful. Like, and I'm sitting there like, oh man,
it's true.
I can
see any of this game
fine.
Because Jake is gonna die
in Left 4 Dead. In Left 4 Dead with a fucking mouse and keyboard.
Oh yeah, I know. Well, I'm the same way. Yeah,
we got into the little Valve press area, and I looked at the demo machines. I was like, oh fuck, it's just 360 controllers. Right. So I knew that I was gonna just be like,
wandering
around like an out of control robot, like just like dying at my feet.
Oh, you know what's bad for me too is that when I play with. In a game where I'm just extremely unfamiliar with the controls, like that one, for example, one, I don't know how to fucking do anything, so I don't know how to melee a guy or like kneel down.
Right,
or anything
it takes you like at least 10 minutes to figure out that X is reload. Like you keep forgetting that. Yeah,
But also what it does to me, for some reason, there's a weird psychological effect where my brain just tells itself like, you suck at this, who cares, fucking go nuts. And so
I saw that in action, like, when you played Mass Effect 2.
Oh really? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
there was about 2 minutes where you tried to you know do everything, and then you finally were just like, fuck it. Well, it was after I told you that the god mode was on. You're like, oh, there's god mode's on, oh okay. And then you just started walking forward. Right. And for the rest of the demo there was just blood
just
covering
shooting,
the screen.
Yeah.
And then at the end you're like,
face,
that demo
blank.
Was shit. And I it's like, maybe it was because you couldn't see anything because the blood was clouding your vision.
And so when I was playing Left 4 Dead 2, I was literally just like, for some reason it's really hard for me to care about what my character's doing in the game when I just can't control it at all. I was just running around with like a katana the whole time, just like slicing dudes, running away from my group.
Just
and it's funny too because I was surviving like quite a long time because the director was not putting shit.
Running
like,
around. This guy, ignore him. He's not. Yeah. I don't know, he's the special character.
It was pretty hysterical. My teammates probably didn't think so. Nick, you probably didn't think so because you said you died and I was running around with a sword.
Yes,
that came out.
I was hit by a jockey
Chet interview
and getting shambled around the corner, and I could see. You off in the distance just like waving at things with your sword, and I was yelling at you like, help, and then I died.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's all right.
The Mass Effect
that's okay
2
Jake
thing,
and I
though,
won the game
was
so
part of the Mass Effect 2 problem was not just the controls, it was literally the brightness on that monitor was,
oh yeah I know,
the gamma was
it
so
was really
low
dark.
I could hardly even see anything. That's just one of those things of just make sure your demo station's set up right, please.
Yeah.
Because I like how dark Mass Effect is in a lot of cases, but this was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean,
Mass Effect 2 way darker.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
It's just like that on everyone's
wrong
machine.
Meaning of dark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's dark.
Well, even in the interview, Mac was like, yeah, it's, you know, Shepard's got some dark choices this time.
You're fucking telling me. Did you see that demo station? Oh, excuse me? Anyway, it was dark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I sucked at those games.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? This is completely not... I have nothing interesting to say about this game because I only played it for a minute, but...
go on.
It's not funny or anything. The Supreme Commander 2... I don't know, Jake, you looked very suggestive there.
Go on. Go on. It's not funny or anything. I don't have anything interesting to say about this game. I don't know what I'm talking about. Nothing interesting to say. Anyway, now that I've disclaimed it three times and I have chosen to not take the humorous segues that have been introduced three times since you started this...
Look, I want this to be unfunny. No.
Supreme Commander 2.
Square Enix owns it now, I think, because I loaded up. I was at a demo station of that game at the Alienware booth or something, and all the copyright stuff all said Square Enix rather than Gas Powered Games. So that's Chris Taylor's probably not thrilled about that, but I guess it was probably the only way he could get a big enough budget to
right,
because I don't know. Supreme Commander demands a certain amount of polish, and
the Supreme
kind of,
Commander demands.
He demands polish.
He does.
Yeah.
It's not like Demigod where you could make that game on a lower budget. You know what I mean? It's
this one, right. The fucking Supreme Commander.
He's pretty supreme. Yeah. I mean,
he needs that money.
Yeah, for supremacy.
To retain supremacy.
Oh, supremacy. That's a real word, unlike the one I said.
It's Commander of Supremacy. Yeah. Square Enix.
Weird also that they're publishing Order of War.
Oh, right.
Have you played that demo, Nick?
No.
It was weird. I tried it. It was definitely not my thing. Anyway, that's all I have to say about that.
Square Enix. Do you have anything to say about Left 4 Dead 2 other than we played it?
Had some interesting visual things to say.
I had some visual things to say, I guess.
Speaking about your visual things.
I will say that I haven't played Left 4 Dead 1 on the Xbox, so I can't entirely compare.
No, I think it did look better, though. I mean, obviously,
we were talking about that, just how sort of like one step at a time Valve seems to be secretly entirely rewriting the renderer for Source, where it seemed like the flashlight was once again massively improved.
Looked really good.
It's been, I mean, even in things like Doom, where it's all real-time shadows, it feels like you can see a distinction
between
Doom 1, all real-time shadows. It seems like you can always sort of see the light beam cast by your flashlight independent of the shadows that it casts. Yeah. You know, like it's sort of, it's light and then the projected shadows and then the projected shadows from other lights, and they all sort of just transparently dissolve over each other. But in Left 4 Dead 2, I was having a huge amount of trouble telling the difference between baked in shadows, real-time shadows cast by world lights and the flashlight stuff. I always want shadows in games to be good because they never are. Your character casts blending correctly into a shadow cast by an object.
Yeah, that stuff is
and then a flashlight hitting it and cutting through all the layers correctly down to the textures.
Right.
Nothing does that right. And Left 4 Dead 2 was doing it really well, and it mixed with all of the other sort of post-processing of the sort of dynamic contrast and grain and stuff that Valve puts over Left 4 Dead. God, it looked really nice.
It did look really
nice.
Like,
I realized that for the first time in a long fucking time or ever, I wasn't really thinking about the flashlight as a thing. I don't know. Like, I just...
Yeah, yeah.
In that shitty 60s hotel walking through all those rooms, and it's that Left 4 Dead 2 sort of dusky, not like super overcast. Maybe it's kind of about to become twilight.
Mm-hmm.
So all the rooms were pitch black with just a little bit of gray, and then putting the flashlight in there, man, it looked real. It was weird.
Also, the swamp looked amazing.
Yeah, the swamp.
When the flashlight hit the water.
Yeah, when the flashlight hits the water.
Sort of murky yellow.
Yeah, you can see it go down and through the water.
Man, I should have played this.
It was good.
The stanky yellow glow of a flashlight in really gross water. Yeah.
Also, and when you move through the water.
Yeah, water slows you down.
Really
now.
Slow. Yeah,
it was
which
fun.
Was kind of shocking, actually.
And watching other people, they actually got all the weird sort of like splashes and trail coming out. Graphic whoredom going on here.
Yeah.
But whatever. It was really nice to look at.
I mean, it's really surprising.
Not to be trite, and it's obviously not the core of the game, but you definitely couldn't do that with DLC.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I mean, it's interesting, too, because
there's a lot of little details on Left 4 Dead 2 that make me happy that they were willing to just go, boom, doing a new thing. Sort of like what they did with the episodes, where it was like, well, we could, I guess, go back and redo all of the lighting in Half-Life 2 to support HDR and the new texture passes that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Or, fuck that, we're going to start making new content using this stuff. And it's nice that they're doing that with Left 4 Dead, where it's like, this is just a separate SKU in the same universe using all of this new stuff that we're putting. Even though we only play two screens or two scenes worth, it actually did feel enough like it was like the second entry in the series that I was glad that they just bit the bullet and did it.
Yeah.
And just on that note, coincidentally, I mean, we were loading up a number of Source games today, including Half-Life, Episode 1, Episode 2, Portal, And it was sort of striking how...
God, the difference between original Half-Life 2 and Half-Life 2 Episode 2?
That's what I'm talking about. No, it's,
but then, crazy. I mean, I think Left 4 Dead 2 is definitely the next step up from all of those.
Right.
Which was really interesting. Also, they, in classic fucking Valve style, they ended the demo at the exact point.
Oh, I know. You know, my God.
Like, all those original Half-Life 2 videos were like, something epic was about to happen, and you were like, oh, man, this is going to be good. Slow fade out.
Yeah.
Like, in this, it's not quite that. Like, it wasn't a huge lumbering monster, but the safe house.
Well, no, there were, like, for 5 minutes before we got to the point, we're like, oh, man, it looks like we're going to be able to ride some rides now. We're getting into the crazy funhouse section. This has been great. Oh, shit. Oh, and then we get in our room, and it's just like, there's this huge...
The safe house door was the entrance to a shuttered... Right. Tunnel of love.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, so the backside of the door blatantly was going to open up inside an abandoned abandoned theme park, like, dark ride where you ride around in a boat.
And then
the demo just fades out. Yeah. It's like, oh, like,
and then we waited for at least a minute. We were like, is this it? Oh, come on. And is this like, it?
And then, what's her name?
Katie.
Yeah. She said, no, she said, oh, you guys can keep playing. And I'm like, I know. Oh, really? And then it's like, oh, but it's just the same two scenarios over and over. Like, oh.
But yeah, like, multiple fake outs.
It literally was like, you walk up the stairs and you see the little railings that go down. And then there's just a series of like painted red plywood hearts. And in the middle of the last heart is the door to the safe house.
Yeah. Oh,
and then
man.
It fades out. I was like, this is going to be, oh, you bastard.
It was pretty torturous.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, Chet was talking about how there, you know, will be actual, like, rides that you can compete in, I guess, or something.
Like, not rides, but like
not
games.
Not rides, but carnival games. Yeah. I guess, which is weird.
But yeah.
But you should, I guess people should listen to that podcast
Left 4 Dead 2,
if you want to know more about that.
Pretty goddamn fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the things that are different from Left 4 Dead 1 actually stood out surprisingly well for me, and I was enjoying it a lot.
Yep.
Melee weapons
were great.
One thing I'm not thrilled about to balance out my enthusiasm is the retailer exclusive or pre-order Steam exclusive weapons.
Oh, the baseball bat?
I think that's bullshit. Yeah.
Yep, that is stupid.
It kind of sucks,
bullshit.
But
I'm so tired of that stuff.
I mean, they're having it so that if anyone on the server has it, everyone can, but I still think it's stupid. Anything that means, like, if you go to GameStop and get something better for buying the exact same game for the same price...
How long does that exclusive last?
I have no idea. I anything like that, I am against on principle.
Yep.
I can't stand anything that... Ugh. The worst.
So fuck Left 4 Dead 2.
On that note.
No, I mean, you know, I hate when people raise those issues to the exclusion of talking about other interesting things about a game, so I'll never do that. But, I mean, it is something I think is stupid, and I do want to say so.
Also, playing the game, I did really miss the overall mood of the Left 4 Dead 1 lighting. Like, I saw that in the screenshots when Left 4 Dead 2 was first announced. Like, it's daytime, it's overcast.
Oh, yeah.
I know they're doing that to differentiate it. And, I mean, it does... Yeah. It totally feel very different from Left 4 Dead 1. But Left 4 Dead 1 did such a good job over the four scenarios of just nailing basically every iconic lighting scenario and sort of
time from a zombie
that you can
film,
have in the final act of a zombie movie. And then this game was like, well...
Well, the first demo that they gave at E3 was just completely in the daytime.
Yeah.
Which was weird.
This one was
jarring. I mean, I think that,
Resident Evil 5.
I like that they're willing to go for it, but I do sort of hope that we end up with a couple campaigns that are darker and they're just holding
Also, I will bet that they will refine this quite a bit in running up to the release. If you saw
4 weeks?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think from the E3 demo, you know, I'm talking specifically about the daylight stuff. If you looked at, like, I mean, they did a blog post on this, but if you looked at what... the early stuff that they released for Left 4 Dead and then what they did release.
It definitely didn't bother me once I got into the thick of it, but it, for the first like 5 or 10 minutes that we were playing, like,
and in a Valve game, the opening impression usually is pretty key or like a pretty big thing nail.
Who knows if the real campaign's going to start at that exact same point, but that stuff where you're just out on the road and it's daytime and you jump through the abandoned overpass into the hotel, all that stuff just, it didn't really click that well for me. But then once you get into the swamp and then once you get into the amusement park, it was fucking gold.
Yeah, I would agree.
Also, the slogan for Dark Carnival is "You must be this tall to die."
Yeah, I know, it's amazing.
Which is it's good. It's maybe my favorite of all of the little Left 4 Dead catchphrases that have been released. Anyway, Left 4 Dead 2000.
Yeah, we talked about a lot about that and released a podcast about it. So
I know, but it was fun.
Oh no, I know. Yeah,
Jesus, Chris, why don't you just calm down?
you guys.
You just didn't play it enough.
So anyway, Mass Effect.
I don't have much to say about Mass Effect 2. The demo did not excite me. The demo really confirmed to me, like, and you know, I know I'm the stupid PC guy, but like,
yeah, you were really
talking about PC all the time. I didn't have a whole lot of trouble with it. I know, but you played the first one on 360, right?
I did.
Like going to me from the PC one, where you've got a pause menu, where you've got access to all of your weapons, all of your squad mates' commands, everything all at one time, plus a pointer. It going from that to like two entirely separate radial menus on the 360. It was really difficult to go down to that. I don't know.
I did want to
just for people who haven't played. I just want to say, like, honestly, if you are able to play the game on PC and like you know, it would be worth considering that because more so than most ports, it's a very different feel.
Yeah.
Yep. No, I agree. I mean, I've played it on PC a little bit, and it is definitely superior. We were hoping that the PC UI and everything will be carried over to the PC version of Mass Effect 2. I don't think we've heard whether that's the case or not.
We asked Mac, but he didn't know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not his department, I guess.
Right. The one thing I did want to say, though, is that the combat in Mass Effect 2, I think, is much improved. There is locational damage.
Right, that's a huge improvement.
When you shoot a guy, he reacts, and you can blow his head off.
Can you shoot him in the balls?
You can, although they have, you know, like, robot balls. So
what?
Not as satisfying.
Even the humans, it's weird.
Yeah. In the future, everyone has robot balls.
Well, you know, Mac was saying they're going to try to... With this story of this game.
What is life?
What is life?
What is machine?
What is AI? What's a machine? And what we mean by that is everybody's
balls.
Been equipped with robot balls, cyborg balls. How many balls are replaced before you lose your humanity? These questions and more explored in Mass Effect 2.
Balls. Mass Effect 2, balls.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
It's a DLC.
People come to Idle Thumbs for the highbrow discussion.
Yeah.
Yep.
Also, yeah.
So that's what I wanted to say about Mass Effect 2.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, I guess, you know what? I guess to be a little more current with respect to Mass Effect, I did get the Pinnacle Station DLC for the first game. Wait, what?
Okay. Let's keep talking about Mass Effect, by all means.
I'll try to limit it.
Let's humor Chris here with his Mass Effect talking.
You assholes. I hate you guys. I hope you get... Never mind. I shouldn't even say that. I was going to say something distasteful.
Won M1?
No, but that was funny, actually.
Yeah.
Brad, one of the Bombcast guys, he may have said this on their podcast. I haven't listened to it this week, but I guess, determined the PAX version of swine flu is called E1M1, which is really funny.
Yeah, I guess people at PAX may have been spreading swine flu around.
Yeah, I think we missed out on that particular trend.
We'll find out.
Give us a few days.
I might get E1M1.
Mm. Yeah. But yeah, Pinnacle Station DLC for Mass Effect 1. This was really under the radar. I don't see a lot of people talking about it, probably because it's DLC for a 2-year-old game at this point.
Yeah.
That might be why. Yeah. And they hadn't released any for almost that long.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's really strange DLC. It's not at all what you'd expect in a game like Mass Effect. Basically, there's a space station that you go to in the game in space, and it's a bunch of combat scenarios. You go in and there's like a time trial thing where you kill as many guys as you can,
like,
or there's a point capture mission where you have to capture points as quickly as possible. Yeah, it's a VR mission thing.
So it's like, or it's like the Mirror's Edge.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Mirror's Edge stuff, but all combat. And it's weird. You have to beat an alien. There's an alien who has the high score on most of these missions, and you got to beat his.
Do you ever meet him? Does he come by?
Oh, yeah,
like,
he
with
comes
his gym
by
towel
and,
over his shoulder.
You know, gives you shit for being a human and not being whatever.
I'd like to
whatever
see
kind of
my latest event.
Well, that's basically what it is. And then you've
see
got
you
your
after
like
the match. Like, sorry. When you said there's an alien you have to beat or done all these, I totally picture a guy with the towel over his shoulder and like a headband and like a sweatband and wristbands on in his trainers.
That's the Pinnacle Station. I'm the best. I'm the champion.
Why isn't
I've
he in
all
there?
The high schools. Yeah.
And then he sort of goes and gets all sort of. He starts fuming as you beat his scores.
Yeah. Well, he also basically does that.
What does he?
Well, he gets.
I concede you are the best.
I still have one more score to beat. I beat 7 out of 8 of his scores, so I'm getting pretty close. Mm. And the last one's the only one that's actually been hard, so that's kind of annoying. But it's weird. I can't really decide if it's worth it or not. It's a very weird thing. It for me, it came at the precise right moment because it was right at the point in the game where I finally just pumped a ton of points into sniper rifles and all the weapon skill that make your sniper rifle not useless. So it was right when I'm like, hey, I can shoot a guy now. So that, you know, I can't speak for what it would be like for anyone else.
Yeah.
That's when Dieter started giving you his crazy challenges.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There also is the best, like one of the best space moments in this DLC
best
where
space moments.
The, I guess the
top 10 space moments.
I'm going to do that blog post. You can, the station, I guess, is orbiting some planet with Saturn like rings. Yeah. And you can just look out one of the windows and just see an amazing shot of a ringed planet with a sun peeking out from the edge and kind of refracting around or whatever. It's pretty great.
Not so as that's great as the moon, though.
It's not as cool as
if the moon. Only the space station was also a moon.
Wow, nice one, Jake.
Yeah. Oh yeah, sorry.
Space station.
Wow, unintentional
moon.
Reference. Okay, good job.
It's no moon.
Well, it is in your case. Anyway, goddamn. All right, let's move on here. Woo. We have so
maybe
much stuff still to talk about. Oh, okay.
Oh. Do we have more PAX stuff? Because maybe we
that may be it, PAX stuff.
Yeah, guys. we could cut off the
we
PAX
could cut
stuff.
Off PAX.
We're cutting off PAX. PAX you're cut gone. Off.
All right. I can stop anytime I want.
Oh, the coolest space moment was in the downloadable content.
All right, we're taking a break.
Stop PAX.
Oh, yeah.
Video game.
The next evolution of the Cytek Cyborg.
Cyborg, you've grown. You sprouted additional robot arms.
Let go of my gun.
The third one just latches
your
on your
gun
face.
Is now a game controller.
Whoa!
This is like pistol grip.
Early 90s peripheral commercial.
Yeah. It's like a bunch of pencils get knocked over as the Falcon, like, the butt of the gun, sort of with force feedback, punches over a wall of transparent plastic bricks.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Force feedback!
Oh, the camera does some unnecessary, like, skewing.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
your parents help you hook it up.
As it punches through the camera. Right. Yeah! Yeah.
Oh. Cool, cool tools.
Favorite games.
Yeah.
Video games.
Video games return.
Video games.
Hmm.
We were playing some video games just before recording this cast. We actually delayed recording this for 3 hours.
Yeah.
While playing many video games.
Yes. Yeah. So we were playing Nick's sneak copy of
Beatles Rock Band.
Beatles
which
Rock
is
Band.
Fully
which is,
released by the time
out now.
You hear this anyway.
We were playing an early copy, though. Yeah, even though I think even right now people were getting it in stores because I think it came out early tonight.
Game. Yeah. Yeah. But that's okay. It was super fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nick, you completed it.
I did.
What is your overall impression of this video game?
It's really good.
Yeah, that's what I gathered.
Yeah. Yeah, they did a really good job with this game.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys saw.
It's great.
It is fun as hell.
Yeah.
Obvious points that will probably annoy people, but it is so goddamn fun to play a Rock Band game when every single song is amazing.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yes. Exactly.
God.
Yeah.
Like, I like Rock Band and Guitar Hero, but there's so much stuff in there that's just butt.
I've been experiencing that recently, actually.
In comparison to my personal tastes, which are maybe stupid, I don't know.
Well,
when every song is a top-shelf Beatles song, which are most every Beatles song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, in Rock Band 2, I've been playing a lot of Rock Band 2. No, it's true, because I've been playing a lot of Rock Band 2. There are a lot of songs that I like, but I wish I could delete half of them.
Right,
because I'm tired of seeing those songs.
Right, but yeah, just
But this game, I wouldn't...
With Beatles Rock Band, we had it on for 3 hours, and I was never annoyed that someone was in the room playing Rock Band.
Right.
Exactly, yeah. You don't have that, like, I love rock and roll for 3 hours while the drunk girl can't play anything else.
Might right, happen. No, that's a classic syndrome.
Yeah.
But occasionally Iron Man...
Oh, God, the worst.
Yeah.
It's too bad, too, because Rock Band turns, like, decent or tolerable songs into horrible. Yeah, exactly. There's so many. God, weird. Some of these must be shared experiences, because I don't think I've even ever played this with you.
Oh, God.
But
what is it?
Because everybody knows it, and, like,
it's whether there are now common, just shared sort of universal experiences.
Yes.
Of, oh, those two people at the party are still playing it.
Yeah. But given how many times I've listened to every single Beatles album in my life, like 1,000 times, sometimes in a row,
yeah,
I really don't think I'll be having that problem.
Well, and actually, it was interesting, though, because I was not... I mean, I like the Beatles, but I was not somebody that listened to a lot of the Beatles.
But now you will.
But now I will, and that's why this game is also really cool.
Harmonix and Apple Corp wins and has defeated Apple you. Core. Apple yeah. Core, you're right, sorry. That's true, I forgot that it's
a Beatles
joke.
Love horrible puns.
Yeah, they, right? I forgot that it's amazing.
Including their band name and Revolver and Apple Core.
Yep.
And Rubber Soul. Those are all, none of them are deep. You all think like Revolver or Rubber Soul is supposed to be deep? Nope. They just thought it was funny that Revolver turns around on a record player.
Yep. Yeah.
And Rubber Soul is like what you have on your shoe.
Yep. Yeah. The Beatles are dumb.
Anyway,
they
sorry.
They're kind of dumb. But they're also great.
This game exists to remind you that you like the Beatles a lot and to make you think about the Beatles music.
Yes.
It might do that really well, actually.
It does that really well. And also not in a really annoying way. I mean, it's all really well done.
We might have all fallen really hard for Beatles Rock Band.
It's really good.
Yep, take
and
that.
In contrast to Nick, just for the other sort of Beatles experience, well, I guess we're not covering the one that doesn't like the Beatles. But
I hated the game.
Oh, okay. I am a huge Beatles fan to the point where I do listen to those. I just go back and listen to particularly the sort of second and third thirds of their career.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of re-impressed by how good those albums are. I mean, really.
So, like, starting with the stadium segment of Beatles Rock Band and
right.
on.
But, you know, like, basically Rubber Soul and Revolver and everything after, like, everything from that point to me. I mean, a lot of the earlier stuff I'm not into for full album point of view. There's a lot of great individual early Beatles songs that are even some among my favorites. But when they started getting into that kind of Rubber Soul, Magical Mystery Tour, Revolver, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Every one of those albums is just solid gold. And when I've been listening to a bunch of them again recently just because the Beatles have been on my mind largely because of this game. Mm-hmm. And I really am just amazed by what a great band that was. And so I'm pretty jazzed about this game. And I don't have my own copy yet, but Nick, you brought that one over and oh my God, it's been so fun to just go through. And like Jake says, not ever have to worry about hitting the one where
single song's like, oh man, this, hey,
yeah,
or like, oh, I haven't heard, like, I don't know, there have been some Beatles songs that I just haven't heard that much of, but
a lot of the early covers and stuff that weren't like Lennon, McCartney or Harrison songs, but and it's cool too, you know. I've seen a lot of complaints about people expectations that the game would be too easy, and it's certainly not at all on the level of a Guitar Hero sort of five or something. But
Chris, both you and Nick obviously play Rock Band and Guitar Hero a lot more than me, which is next to never. I've been playing on medium because I'm a baby, but I mean, you guys have been getting 99-100% on a lot of these songs first playthrough.
Yeah. Although at this point, though, I get 99 around Rock Band 2 songs.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I get that on most songs I play on these games at this point.
It's easier overall, but it's not. It's not that it's not fun for being easier.
No,
I mean, they're all, it's actually, I would say that, you know, I mean, I think challenge is part of what makes Rock Band fun. I do think that is an important part of it.
You wouldn't want to just be playing nothing but power chords the entire time.
But there is an art to a note chart that goes beyond that. Like,
agreed,
I mean,
completely agreed.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it, you know, I mean, keeping it fresh and interesting and making sure that it actually matches the music in a satisfying way goes beyond, you know, whether there are like 1,000 goddamn notes on the screen.
Right. And also, as you guys both predicted, especially you, Chris, before this game came out, this might be the first Rock Band or Guitar Hero game where playing the bass is fucking fun.
Yeah, that's actually really refreshing to when you think about it.
Because Paul McCartney was a great bassist. I mean, people talk a lot about how the Beatles stuff isn't super crazy from a musicianship point of view, but Paul McCartney, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the best rock bassists.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
His bass lines are absolutely fantastic. And even the ones that aren't particularly difficult, Harmonix does such a great job of nailing the flow of what, because I do play all these instruments in real life as well. And I really believe that as Nick says, there is an art to these charts. And they do a fantastic job of nailing the kind of rhythm and sway of the bass. It's very different from guitar, even though they're the same note structure.
Which song is it where I was playing bass and failed out? The only time that I failed out. And
Taxman?
That's right. You were just going, chunk.
Yeah.
Chunk.
Yeah.
Like, that's the fucking lead guitar part. And then the song
and
just
the bass
sounded
is just
so
like,
dead.
Well, yeah. Doom, 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 doom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The, it's one of the cool, not cool things, but one of the sort of realities of the Beatles sort of catalog in this game is that there are a lot of songs that do have individual easy parts. I mean, there are some songs where McCartney just, you know, does a pretty simple walking bass line or something. But there's generally at least one instrumental part in every song that is really interesting. Or
even between just guitar and bass. I mean, usually you can choose the one that is more, you know, demanding and not have to worry about.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. And there are some drum tracks that are more involved. The drum tracks are going to be the ones that are consistently least interesting. And that's just something that is a reality of Ringo's drumming. I think he's a really appropriate drummer for the Beatles, but he's definitely not all that technically sort of complex, but
I'm sure there will be some interesting ones.
Surprising drum moments. Yeah. I played through most of the game on drums, and it was actually really nice for somebody like me who I'm always on the bleeding edge between hard and
the bleeding edge.
The bleeding
of
bleeding
drums.
Edge. Yeah.
got Neil Peart over here.
But no, I'm always sort of between hard and expert in Rock Band 2. Some songs I completely fail on expert and other songs I are really easy on hard for me.
Right.
But I think a lot of people will be able to eventually reach expert, and just be able to play, the actual drum beats in this, which is really satisfying when you actually reach expert on drums. It's not comparable to the guitars at all. I mean,
no, it's totally different.
And the vocals obviously is fairly accurate, but, it's really fun.
And on that note, the thing that's totally new to this game, and Jake and I have not played yet, but Nick, maybe you have, the harmony parts on the vocals.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's amazing. It adds a lot. Because, I mean, it's really challenging.
Were you and your girlfriend singing two-part harmony?
Yeah, well, yeah. And also, just I was actually singing alone as well, awesome. Which is also challenging. I mean, it's cool. It's really cool that you have the choice. I mean,
right, right.
And when you try and hit it, you fuck it up a lot of the
time.
Because I'm not a singer, but it's fun because it is challenging. And when you hit it, though, you're not on the melody, and it's just it adds something to the game.
Does the game have any sort of training thing that'll let you hear an isolated version of those? Because like, there's no way that I can carry a tune pretty well. I was told I don't have a good singing voice, but I can pick out notes okay as a person who's just sort of has played music at some point in my past. But yeah, there's no way I'm gonna be able to just There's nowhere to go with that.
There are training modes. Yeah, there are training modes, and there are also, even things like the drum training mode has a specific thing that'll teach you like 80 different drum beats.
Yeah,
voiced by Ringo.
Yeah.
Do you guys get the impression that maybe, and I'm pulling this out of my ass, but when Paul and Ringo, because they had to prove everything in this game.
Right.
Because there's all this stuff. Whenever you read an article about this game, it's always like, oh, yeah, Ringo told us, your elbow's got to be a little higher to be what I look like. And Paul would say, this thing's not quite right when I play the bass. Do you guys think maybe they were watching this and when they saw stuff like whammy bar affecting pitch and like drum fills, they're just like, what? What is this?
Why
are you allowed to fuck with our shit?
Yeah,
Take that out. Get that out of the game.
That's
kind of what I think happened.
It's that or their publicist noticed that and told them, and then they were like, shit!
the right. Whammy bar not doing anything is a bummer.
Yeah,
it is a bit of a bummer, yeah. And also, you can't play... Also, at the beginning of a song, when you're just screwing around, if you hit the drums...
That one actually bothers me.
It does bother me.
I can understand not putting in custom fills, I guess, but it really irritates me that you can't just dick around on the drums at the beginning.
It does take a little bit
away
from the
game. That's one of my favorite things about Rock Band.
Yeah, and it always makes that little warm-up moment sound so much more realistic to me.
Exactly, right.
When the camera's panning out and the crowd's going, it's just... Like, what the fuck?
It's also a lot less noticeable when you screw up in this game.
But it is still,
even when you don't play at all, you can sort of still...
It's less noticeable than other Rock Band games, but it's still, like... My mind was destroyed.
Oh, right. Yeah.
When I first went and stopped playing, and I was like, what the fuck? The lead guitar part is missing from a Beatles song.
Yeah.
What is going on?
Yeah.
And I mean, like, Chris, you and I had, we came across those, there were, on the internet, we came across four leaked tracks from Sgt. Pepper, where it was sort of scratchy recordings of the four actual original four track tracks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could go and listen to, just the harmonies or just the guitar. But it was crazy hearing it in this weird pristine setting that sounds just like the album, and then suddenly,
right?
What the fuck?
Yeah. Well, it's cool because one of my favorite things to do, and I'm listening to Beatles albums, is because they were using an early kind of heavy-handed use of stereo to just completely tune out either the left or right channel. The way the Beatles stereo stuff is mixed, it's really basic for some reason. Like they pretty much put everything in one channel or the other.
They just got excited about that.
Yeah, I think they did too. And but it is really cool. And the interesting thing about the Beatles is, or to me, one of the interesting things as a musician is that when you do sort of unmix their stuff and listen to individual tracks, a lot of the individual track recordings are pretty raw. Like they're, you know, their voices will crack a little bit, or there'll be the tone of a guitar note isn't quite right. It's stuff that if they were recording it now, some engineer would just go in there with software mm-hmm. and just fix everything.
Yeah.
Even more so though than a lot of contemporary bands, the Beatles left that stuff in the individual tracks. But then when you bring it all together,
it's
found so wonderful, and it's right. cool to you know, in this game, I probably will just go into no fail mode occasionally and just drop an instrument out
right.
and just listen to it, because honestly, even though they're not usually like melting the fretboard with their guitar work, a lot of those guitar lines and also bass lines are extremely interesting. I mean, they're not super difficult per se, but they're very, very interesting. And it's cool that these games allow people to isolate some of that stuff when you might mm-hmm. not do that on your own.
Cool.
I like harmonics in their games.
Yeah.
So, do you guys wish to discuss the Novant Falcon?
Oh, yeah. Speaking of other, we've been playing a lot of peripherals today. A lot of peripheral-based video
Nick,
games.
Nick, you're like, oh, my hand's getting tired. I was like, that's because you're playing Beatles Rock Band, and we were playing a little Half-Life. We were talking earlier about how we had been loading through sort of Valve's Source Engine catalog, and it's because Chris's crazy Novant Falcon peripheral showed up.
Yeah, I got it today.
In an enormous box.
It's already a fairly large device, but the box it's like three times bigger than it needs to be even.
Yeah.
The box could hold a bread machine.
The device is much larger than I assumed.
Than you'd think.
The device looks like the size of, what you'd expect the portal gun to look like.
Yes.
Like when you had Portal open, you could take a picture with
Chris has like even bigger dork than you already are by playing with the Novant Falcon.
You could take a picture where you match the perspective so that the Novant Falcon looks like the back half of the portal gun just blending right into the screen.
Yeah, exactly.
Should we reiterate what the Novant Falcon is?
According to the box, it's a small robot.
Oh, shit. Speaking of which.
Oh, yeah, the box is amazing.
Well, describe it first, but we've got some choice quotes here.
It's a small device that sits... Well, it's not that small. It's a device that sits on your desk, and it has three robotic arms coming out of it that allow you to move this thing in 3D space, move a controller.
It's got a sort of pivot that sticks out of the front of it.
Yeah. You move this around to aim in the same way you would a mouse, but sort of in 3D space rather than on a table. And then as you're doing this, it applies all kinds of forces. So if you're playing a game where you pick up an object, it will... create resistance on the movement of the device so that it feels like what you're picking up is heavier. When you fire a gun, it applies recoil and your hand will snap back. And because it can move in a full 3D space, it's not just like Rumble where it's just on or off. I mean, it's fully directional. Like, and so if you get shot from the side, it'll knock you to the left or to the right and so on.
The most impressive thing in this entire thing was we were playing through Half-Life 2 Episode 2 and...
We all took turns with this for like an hour.
Yeah.
Chris like sort of picked up a piece of wood and was like, oh, you can kind of feel that weird. And then we said, oh man, I hope we can pick up a rock. And then we walked around the corner and there's like a huge fucking stone.
Yeah, boulder.
And you pick it up with the gravity gun and then the Falcon applies resistance in a really realistic way. Like it actually feels like it's using, some sort of actual physics to have gravity work correctly where you sort of pick it up quickly and you can get a little resistance reduction. But it you're fucking lifting that rock up with your hand.
Yeah.
Like, just for kicks, Chris let go of the controller and just went and just slammed onto the desk. Sorry. But it looked like the way that the grip dropped on your desk looked like you had just let go of a rock.
Yeah.
And it had crashed down onto your desk.
And
it was
when you're watching someone else play this, it looks like they're just bullshitting you.
It looks ridiculous. Their arm is just flying around. It looks like somebody who has a controller in their hand.
I think
it's just whipping
it looks like
it around.
When you play Mario Kart on your SNES and you're like zooming all around.
Right. It's who jumps with the Nintendo controller Mario Kart. Actually, I think I've described this before, but when I saw the Wing Commander movie in the theater. I saw it in the theater. When I saw the Wing Commander movie in the theater, the guy sitting
exactly
in front of me,
about, yeah.
whenever the Kilrathi ships would be shown and the guy was shooting, the guy in front of me would go and like shake around in his chair as if like he was firing the gun and feeling the recoil. I did not understand what that guy was doing. But he had two Novant Falcons, one in each hand, and they were wired up to the film. Now I know.
And the thing we did after about half an hour of this is the calibration options on this thing are incredibly detailed. But there's all sorts of sliders for like resistance and weight
all
and all this
sorts
stuff.
Of recoil.
But there's one big slider for master resistance and for mass effect. And if you just turn that all the way to the top, it just magnifies the sort of physical reaction.
So then we were actually
everything.
Having to lift a refrigerator. generator whenever you pick up a rock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But it is really funny. I mean, when you fire a big shotgun or
the best
like
is the assault rifle
when you hold
which just,
it, spray
which
it.
Just bucks until you're basically
yeah.
Staring
the assault
at the
rifle actually
just,
does force you to move it up over time because
it's ridiculous.
The force is,
you've got to actually correct for the recoil.
When my aim was just flying around wildly, like I couldn't hit a damn thing.
The fact that it doesn't only it's not only translation, it's not only movement, but rotation counts was really interesting to me. Like we were playing through episode two, and there's the part where you're with the two resistance guys at the four tunnels when all the antlions are coming in.
The turret defense
and,
part.
Yeah, and the turrets are really heavy. they're probably the heaviest objects that we picked up in the game. But it was interesting to me that I ran out of sort of the ability to lift it up because it was so heavy. We're talking about turrets here.
Turrets, like guns
but,
on
so what
tripods.
I ended up having to do, basically like lifting an actual thing up, is I had to just actually tip my hand back so that the center of gravity both on the actual Novan Falcon and on the turret it was such an interesting
thing. It was fascinating.
Like, I actually felt like I was picking those turrets up and moving them around and setting them down so that the turrets would shoot at the antlions.
All right.
We should bear in mind that this is not what it's like by default. We scaled up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you don't have to play a game like this.
It doesn't have to
this.
Be like, oh, my God, physical force required. But it is an interesting experience.
It is. And one of the most interesting things I thought is that one, that's more what it would be like if you were
Gordon Freeman.
No, but I mean, you know, firing a gun is not what it's like in a video game where you've got perfect. Yeah. What was interesting is that when you, with all of that resistance on, then when you go and find a pistol and it doesn't just knock you on your ass every time you fire it, it's actually really cool. It's like you really are using a pistol as opposed to using an assault rifle or something because
you're firing with a little pea shooter pistol in Half-Life 2. Then you pick up the Magnum and it's like, and you're, the force makes your hand make the camera go flying up
in
the sky.
But I mean, when you go back to the pistol, it makes you really appreciate that it's a manageable weapon that you can get your hand. It's really cool.
My brain accepted the Novan Falcon a lot more quickly than I thought I would.
It was actually fairly intuitive.
It was kind of fun, actually.
It was fun. The only downside, maybe, is that, you know, there is no way to really lean your arm and use this thing.
Well, yeah, there is. They suggest you just do it with a chair with arms on it, which mine does not have.
Yeah, I suppose you could.
Where it's located on your desk in particular is higher than
you really got to plan for this thing, I guess.
Yep. You got to make some room in your life for the Falcon.
Just use a chair with arms if you can.
Otherwise, your arm is going to get very tired.
It's a surprisingly cool peripheral, actually. I do also miss the ability to use a mouse to just whip around 180 degrees because the Falcon is more like an analog stick.
This is not for multiplayer gaming, I don't think.
It's very much for a thing like Half-Life.
It's for an immersive experience. I mean, the games they always use to sell it are one Valve games because they have a lot of physics
Crisis
in them.
Crisis Half-Life.
And then also Penumbra, because that's like entirely a first person sort of physics driven adventure thing.
Oh, yeah. Pull out the
box. I can't wait to play
it. This is amazing. I picked this box up and the quotes on the box are pretty amazing.
Let's just say the Idle Thumbs audience.
You guys
will love these.
I was flabbergasted twice in a row.
So,
go ahead.
On the Novan Falcon Limited Edition. So, think the Wii's remote is innovative. Get ready for 3D touch that will blow your mind. IGN, best of E3 gear.
IGN.com.
And then...
it's followed up with the second
course here.
This is on the other side.
I recently had a hands-on experience with the Novant Falcon, a completely new interface device from Novant Technologies, and was absolutely blown away.
Resident Gamer 4.
That's probably the only one.
So that was pretty good.
Wow.
And, you know, just to drive this home, 20% off with the Wizard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah, if you want one of these, thing. Because you're as crazy as Chris... use promo code the Wizard on the Novant site and get 20% off of your Novant Falcon.
I want to remember to say this because I will forget and you will go crazy if I don't tell you this. It took me like an hour to figure out why my Falcon wasn't working with any Valve games. The reason is because the drivers included on the disc in the box are not the latest drivers. You need to get the ones off of Novant's website, and if you don't, it will only work with the cheesy like demo games they include with the device, which are not
like Citizen Bear or whatever it is.
Monkey
like
Newton. Newton's Monkey.
I would say Citizen Bear. Why is that one?
It's the Citizen Kane.
So yeah, don't even bother with the disc. You don't really even need to. Just go straight to the website and download. That's what I almost did at the beginning. I'm like, I don't need a disc.
I'll use the disc.
I'll just. Mm. Oh, maybe I should use a disc. Yeah. Nope, don't.
Chris bought this, and then we thought it would be funny to get a promo code, The Wizard. Yeah. So those two. Yeah. And we did.
I did, but I bought it, and I'm kind of glad because it's actually really.
Yeah, it's cool.
Unique and cool.
I don't know if I will buy one, but I will play yours sometimes.
Yeah.
Cool. So, God, we've talked about a lot of things today.
Yep.
We have.
Is there anything else that we want to talk about?
I think we could maybe talk about taking a break for a minute.
Okay.
What?
Should we take a break?
It's break the second.
All right.
Breaking it up with breaks.
Break two. Da, 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 da.
Break two. Electric.
Brecken.
Break.
Electric Brecken. Electric Breedon.
Breedon.
Video game.
Welcome to the highly anticipated Dreamcast segment.
Where we read your dreams.
Yeah, we've been talking about doing this for months. So, yeah.
We know you've all been anticipating the Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Especially today. We felt it was time.
Yeah, yep. I mean, we have been talking about doing this for months and months.
Yeah,
and
we requested these ages
ago. Yeah, we requested emails from you about your dreams.
Yeah,
about things that you'd love to see. No, about, dreams you've had about video games. So people wrote in a bunch of them,
and we're gonna people seem to really enjoy.
Yeah, so it's a sort of themed reader mail this week. We did get a lot of really awesome other reader mail this week, and we'll be checking that out next week.
Right, but for now, we're turning your nights into dreams.
Mark writes, "This is an old dream I had when I was a kid, and that I'll never forget. A couple of weeks before I had it, I got a Game Boy, which was my first video game system. My parents had never bought me video game stuff, so I did scrimp and save and only got Link's Awakening with it. In my dream, I was walking in the Nile with a bunch of grass reeds, and I saw the basket with a bunch of blankets in it. This reminded me of the Moses story in the Bible. I was psyched that I'd meet Moses and we'd be best buds. When I moved the blankets, there was no kids, but a bunch of Game Boy cartridges, which was much better. I played the shit out of Kirby in my dream, just making up the gameplay since I've never actually played it. When I woke up, I was terribly depressed that I no longer had a wicker basket of video games. Thanks for the podcast, Thumbs. Also, this is how long ago we asked about this. P.S. I've heard about this Trine game. Is it any good?
That actually, my brother at one point got me Zelda 2 for the NES, thinking that he was getting me Zelda 1 because we were kids at the time.
Oh,
and for some reason, I ended up knowing that was the case because we were somewhere and someone in the room for some reason had a lunchbox that was a Zelda lunchbox, and he pointed at it and just out of the blue was like, "That's a sweet Zelda lunchbox." And it was like Christmas was right around the corner. I was like, "Why are you saying that?" I don't know. It's a pretty cool Zelda. And then I knew that he had gotten Zelda, and then I was sad when it was Zelda 2.
At least it was the Return of Ganon.
It was. I thought it was the Adventures of Link. Oh, Return of Gastro.
Yeah. Bubble Dribble. Yeah. All right. So Donald writes, "Bad Dudes, gentlemen, on last week's cast, you asked for the Bad Dudes release date to determine if Reggae..." Oh, this isn't about a dream. Never mind. Screw you, Donald.
Wait, what
all
about
a dream.
Though?
All
right. On last week's cast, you asked for the Bad Dudes release date to determine if Reagan was still in the office because of somebody's dream. I think we read this months ago. The game was released in arcades and on PCs in 1988, though the NES version came out in July of 89 after Bush the Elder took office.
All right, whatever. Next.
We totally read this. All right.
Please. That's not a dream.
Let's see here. Carl writes, "It's funny you should mention the solicitation of video game dreams, as I had one just prior to that blast. Let me set the scene. With the weather being hotter than hell these past few weeks in the UK, my mind has inevitably taken a turn for the worse. I was in bed the other day, and I thought my PC was playing the Space Harrier theme, even when it was turned off. Regardless, I was awake last night and morning. It was 8 a.m., and I was getting ready to go to bed." What? "I had just discovered Secret of Monkey Island a number of years late, admittedly. After playing a short time, made the meat with a condiment, I figured it was time for me to go to bed. What followed can only be described as one of the weirdest dreams I've ever had. From what I can remember, I was seeing the world through the eyes of Guy when suddenly the dream became third person, and I was watching a fight between myself, LeChuck, and a vaguely androgynous porcelain doll man-woman. We all stabbed each other with swords when LeChuck started to strangle me. For the rest of the dream, I saw it through his eyes, however. My head suddenly started to shrivel and turned into a skull, my neck suddenly turned to rubber, and my face turned into Monkey D. Luffy from the comic One Piece, and then I wrapped my rubber neck around LeChuck and strangled him to death. It was at this point that my brother woke up, and I that I woke up and I quote my brother, "You were talking to yourself in your sleep saying, 'Oh God, don't hurt me,' and flailing your arms around like bees were attacking your face. Stop playing games at 6 a.m. Anyway, keep up the stellar work. I'm a huge fan. You guys are the best, Carl." That's pretty good.
That's pretty great.
That's a crazy dream.
Man, so yeah.
That sounds like something that could be in Monkey Island 2.
Yeah. Yep.
Like in a sequence that I guess I shouldn't spoil, but
yep.
Yeah.
That time when Guybrush turns into Plastic Man.
Exactly.
And
yeah, exactly. Plastic Man is what was being channeled there.
I also like the eyes of Guy. But
yeah. All right. Rich writes something that isn't actually about dreams, but included the word dream, so it showed up in my search. All right. Fraser McMillan writes to Christopher Remo and his idle thumbs, "Sorry to shit all over your dream parade, but this isn't about dreams either. This is about some other podcast or something also asking for dreams and calling us posers or something. I don't know. That's stupid.
fuck you.
Screw this. All right. Liz Beatham writes, "Hello, my favorite podcast, Idle Thumbs.
This other podcast had a thing about dreams."
"I have video game dreams all the time, which is usually pretty great. Although after the first sessions of playing Prototype, I dreamt I had the zombie powers of the main character and the police were pursuing me, and it was incredibly fun. However, when I was a child and playing Doom, the shareware version, because my parents wouldn't buy video games, I had a dream that I was in Doom. I was in a long hallway in a generic dark industrial facility with platforms and lava and assortments of imps, pinky demons, etc. I was running along, jumping over the lava, dodging fireballs, when I opened my inventory, which is retarded because as far as I can remember, you can't actually open an inventory screen in Doom, and realized I had no weapons or ammunition whatsoever. I wonder if that represents feelings of inadequacy, to dream you were in an NPS with no weapons or ammo. Anyway, realizing I had no weapons upset me, and I was very afraid of the pinky demons pursuing me. I was sure they would eventually catch up to me and rip me to pieces, or I'd run into something even worse if I kept going. Feeling that suicide by lava would be a less painful alternative, I ran to the edge of the platform and jumped off. There was a brief flash of pain, and I woke up. I fail at being the Doom Marine. I also sometimes dream I'm playing video games that don't exist, that are always incredibly awesome blends of different genres and really fun. I wake up with a sense of irritation and longing. Does that ever happen to you guys?"
Actually,
that's
yes.
That's our living dream,
I think. I do sometimes have dreams like that where I'm just doing, like, playing a game or watching a film that is just sort of nebulously amazing.
Right.
Right. Yeah,
and my body
yeah.
is just sort of creating, like, false, like...
feedback and false, sort of reactions.
Yeah, yeah. Just, this is so fucking good. And then it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
There isn't anything real that is
stuff
that
is
awesome.
Actually dumb.
Yeah.
Let's see. Wes Ertelak, who we know and he's a cool guy, writes...
Also really quick, that Doom dream is really depressing.
I know.
Yeah, I know.
Good God.
Yeah, I like the psychological analysis, though.
It's good. "Dear Idle Thumbs, I really like your show. Keep up the good work. Lately, I've been having a series of recurring nightmares about Guitar Hero. In the last one, I was over at the house of former Computer Gaming World editor Jeff Green. We were trying to play Guitar Hero together, but the note charts were playing on a small black box covered in colored LEDs instead of a TV, and I totally failed. In a previous version of the same dream, I was playing on the TV, but the note chart was replaced by an isometric field of scrolling 3D columns, like in Zaxxon, and the plastic guitar broke into two pieces in my hands. Man, these are some crazy dreams. Luckily, this time I held the guitar together while I ad-libbed this sweet guitar solo from Stevie Ray Vaughan's Lenny and saved the day. I read a little bit of Freud in college, and when I look back on these dreams, the imagery strikes me as being pretty overt. As a side note, when I was at California Extreme last weekend, several people told me that Sinistar gave them terrifying nightmares as children. I believe it. Even now, the image of that cackling robot skull shrieking 'Run, coward!' is pretty unnerving."
Yeah,
best to Wes Ertelak.
When Sinistar chases you around, it's actually fucked up.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
He does live.
I know.
Let's see. What else do we have here? Man, we're getting through these.
That time when Sinistar calls you up and then says, "I'm your boyfriend now," then his tongue sticks out of the phone?
What?
I get that.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I do.
That's a nightmare on Elm Street. Never mind.
Oh, I've not seen it. I'm stupid.
Yep.
That was a really scary image, though.
Yeah.
Jesus. Let's see. John Wiswell writes, "Dear Idle and the Thumbs, ask and you shall receive video game dreams. I don't normally dream anything related to games, so I was surprised to have a night-long dream last evening about being stuck in a Left 4 Dead-like survival mode."
Man, hopefully it's because we asked for video game dreams. Video game dreams.
My friend and I did not want to play, fearing for our lives, and spent much of the time trying to escape the map, or at least hang out on roofs kicking away ladders a la Resident Evil 4. Instead of two additional partners, we were supported by several dozen lemmings, who and he capitalizes lemmings, so he must be in the video game.
Probably the lemmings from Lemmings.
Who constantly got caught and chewed upon, whereupon we would stop our escape attempt and try to save them. The map only had one tank, Hulk Zombie, which would appear, chase me away from my party and across the map, and then disappear. It really liked doing this, pulling the trick four or five times and destroying several barns and school buildings. I like that this boss zombie is more of just a dick than an actual aggressor. Eventually, I fell through the ground and wound up in a brightly lit golden cathedral full of Plants vs. Zombies corn catapults, which bravely took the tank down in my defense. God, I love that in his dream, the weird surreal thing that happens is an actual plausible video game bug of falling through the world, because everyone's had that experience. That's great. All right, so he continues. The tank was freezing because it had a pat of butter on its head is something I will always treasure. What?
Oh, God.
I reached the surface to find my friend had discovered, he used the word unlocked, the Ghostbusters car, and the siren had scared the zombies away, prematurely ending the level.
Fuck. Wow, that's like a
medley
of... I want to
play this game so bad!
Yeah.
Like, we piled the lemmings into Ecto-1 and drove off the map, but it seemed like another wave of zombies were following just when I woke up. I'll never know if a lemming can wield a proton pack. Please keep up the fine podcast, fellows. Your alternately insight and silly discussions are a pleasure. There be so many dudes in this call had me laughing for hours. I don't remember that, unfortunately.
It was probably pretty good, though.
Yeah, we were probably hilarious.
Oh, man.
Another podcast.
So,
cheers, John Wiswell.
Yeah, that, like, you guys know the game Romcheck Fail.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome. Yeah.
This sounds like the most fucking amazing version of that. Like, you're playing Left 4 Dead, and then maybe lemmings appear, and you can have them build a bridge for you. And then you fall down into what sounds in my brain like the end of Wind Waker. like, that's what I was picturing right there. But then Plants vs. Zombies.
Plants vs. Zombies catapults, and then the Ghostbusters car.
Which is unlockable in some recent game.
Somehow you unlock it. Oh, well, the Ghostbusters game, maybe? Oh, there was also a game.
I thought it was
A
Need for Speed or Burnout.
Burnout had it.
Burnout Paradise,
Also the Ghostbusters game, but fuck that. I want it to be in only games I like. Also, that was a million games that I like.
Yeah.
Also, that was a hilarious
thing. Man. We got a follow-up email from Liz Beatum earlier, who wrote us the one about the Doom Marine. And she says, sup, thumbs. Well, she started off talking about how don't make your podcast shorter in response to the European guy that everyone responded to. But then...
as you can see right now.
More on topic, she says, on the other hand, you started reading an email of mine once, then stopped saying you would save it for a special tears email segment that never actually happened.
Oh, we never did tears!
I can only assume you hated my email so much that you canceled it. Then you requested video game dreams, and I sent something in, and then we never heard about any dreams again.
I am the segment killer.
Thanks for the podcast, though. I love listening to you guys, Liz. That's hilarious.
We should probably do the countdown to tears at some point.
Yeah, we need to remember to do that. Now that we've got way more indefinite number of years added to it, we've got plenty of time. That was a funny observation, though. What else do we have here? I'm glad we at least read one of them now. All right, Pete. My game dream by me, a gamer. Hey guys, you may be sick of these by now, but I had a game dream last night and I figured I'd share in an interest of padding out a future cast. Next, I love that this guy thinks we might be sick of them by now, months later, because like he assumes we're just taking them all and just reading them.
We're so excited by all of these dreams now, though.
I know, it's great.
6 months later.
Next week, I'm going out of town to stay in Edmonton for a few nights. This happened in the past now. Edmonton being the home of BioWare, one would expect that my dream may in some way relate to them. One would be mistaken. In my dream, I'm walking down White Avenue, Edmonton's big party and pub crawl street, with my girlfriend, when suddenly about half a block ahead of me, I see an oddly familiar bald head. Hurriedly saying, I'll be back in a second, I run up to this man and start shouting, Jay? Jay? Jay, is that you? He turns around, and sure enough, I'm face to face with Jay Allard. Although something is not quite right about him. I can't put my finger on it at that time, so I simply ask him if I can get a picture with him. I snap a shot using my Nintendo DSi and return to my girlfriend, smugly thinking to myself how awesome it will be when I reveal to the Idle Thumbs forum that I have in fact discovered Jay Allard's secret Canadian hiding place. I open my DSi to show I love this one. I've read this. I open my DSi to show my girlfriend the picture and begin to explain who Allard is and why I was so excited when I noticed that the picture is not what I thought it was. Rather, there's a picture of me standing next to the Eyes of Allard head from Space Giraffe. Embarrassed, I close my DSi and go back to enjoying my trip.
How can that be a real dream?
I know, that's pretty amazing.
I actually leave on this trip tomorrow and will be listening to the latest blast on my way there. I'll let you guys know if I have any actual Allard sightings while I'm away.
Oh,
keep on casting, blasting, and running a solid 40 minutes over your intended recording length. Every minute the cast goes over the 1 hour mark makes my week that much better. Cheers, Pete Worthington, Miffy495 from the forums. God, that's amazing. Wow. That might be the most amazing dream. This guy might win an award.
I like that he was ashamed in his dream that he accidentally got a space giraffe level.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The thing that's amazing about this one is it's such a classical movie dream.
Right.
Like, yeah, this,
like,
is
Alfred
such,
Hitchcock directed that
exactly,
dream.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is the ideal.
Oh, no.
Like,
oh, it's... Oh, I thought it was something else.
Right.
Yeah.
Interpretable dream. Like,
right.
This,
right.
There, you know.
David Lynch.
Oh, my God. Brilliant. That's and the fact that it was Jay Allard and then... Like,
right,
Jeff,
like, where you
Minter's
see him from
weird...
the back of his head, and then he turns around, and
right,
it's really
yeah,
it's him.
The...
But is it really? But something is wrong.
Something's
yeah,
wrong,
but the fact that
Jay
you can't
Allard.
Tell until you open up
right.
the picture.
It's,
and he start even it's even like
an eternal
he starts
of the spotless
it.
Mind, like when Elijah Wood is there, and
right,
he's
yeah.
trying to turn him around, and then his
right.
face is
baby
like
baby boy.
Out.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, right, right, right.
yeah,
God, so that was incredible. You sir, God, you win a medal. All right, so Griff Rousseau, Icebox, well known to this cast,
Icebox.
Sex box. sex
box. Oh, yeah, there's a sex box.
Yeah,
now.
There is a sex box.
There's an all new box added to the lineup.
Yeah, yeah.
Crap box.
Crap box. Suck box. Ice box.
Sex box.
All right, moving on. Ice box's dream. Here's an actual dream I had about Monkey
Christ.
Island 2 and a few other video games.
Two Monkey Island dreams.
Oh, wow.
Thumbs.
I woke up at 4:30 yeah. after having this eerie and unnerving dream and could not get back to sleep. So before I forgot this strange adventure, I wrote it down for the convenience of you and your listeners. It began with Grim Fandango. The Temple Gate had been unurbanized with sprawling deco cafes and phone booths, bars, elevators, and high-rise towers. Many has returned to the Land of the Dead on some strange mission or else has failed to escape. I am silently following someone who is hunting him, a hitman.
This is a Grim Fandango 2.
Again, capital hitman, so presumably he's talking about the hitman.
Right, yes.
Right.
I try to tail him, but I am barred from the third floor cafe that he enters. I later find Manny before watching helplessly as he is shot and thrown out the window onto the train tracks. He says sadly, ominously, "This is it, Gladys. This is the end."
Oh, Jesus.
But it is, yeah, but it isn't. I wander into a refrigerator, strangely hollow like a door, and as I walk deeper and deeper, what the hell? It slowly begins to look like the underground tunnels from Monkey Island 2. I walk out and I'm in the winding paths of a seeming Monkey Island episode, but it's not actually from one. Some strange premonition urges me to search for potatoes. This is the dream, he claims. So I follow one of countless monkeys to yet another fridge. Inside a small room with bland concrete walls, I grab a sack of potatoes off a shelf, then proceed even deeper. The ground slowly turns to water, so I begin paddling. Then it begins to get creepy. Softly, slowly, the unnerving and eerie music from Monkey 2's finale begins to play. LeChuck is following me. Lurching through the shallow swamp water, I wander through a doorway and everything changes again. The perspective zooms out to the galaxy stage in Spore, then zooms back into a lost Aztec ruin in the Midwest. I walk through the quickly thickening jungle and hear the snarl of countless panthers. It is Bioshock 3. The panthers are modified with some form of atom. But walking deeper, the halls begin to change back into the underground tunnels. It is a dead end. LeChuck walks in and says good night and flicks off a light switch, cackling maniacally. I wake up in a cold sweat. Author's note, this dream has been presented in its original unaltered format. It seems spontaneously and absolutely crazy, but you asked for the real deal. And the really weird thing is I hardly ever even dream about video games. Icebox, and then he adds in parentheses, fucking Icebox, that guy's a fucking jerk.
Okay, that was good.
Oh, man. That's pretty extreme
that's
dream.
Yeah. Yeah, an extraordinarily
also,
extreme dream.
Also, points for a Bioshock sequel appearing in your
yeah,
dream.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So now we've got Bioshock 3 has Panthers?
Panthers,
yes.
And Bioshock 5 is on the moon.
The moon.
Yeah. So once we fill in Bioshock 4, we'll actually...
It might be the Leisure Suit Larry of Bioshock.
That's true. In Bioshock 5, you'll travel back in time to Bioshock 4.
Right.
But Bioshock 4 will not in and of itself exist.
Mm.
So, well played, 2K.
Exactly.
2,000 games.
Well played,
2,000 games. Okay. What else do we have here? I think we're getting to the end of the dreams, but I think we might have a couple more. We got some recently from people who I guess were still holding out hope that we'd someday do this, and I guess that faith paid off. Or maybe not.
Hmm.
When are you writing about dreams?
Oh, here we go. Okay. Oh, this isn't a dream, but this is really funny, actually. This is Lawrence, it's kind of like a dream. It's Lawrence, our buddy. You heard him on one or two of the GDC casts?
Yeah, he was on some of the conf grenades.
One of the UK folks. He says, Hey guys, I noticed in the thread, the forum thread of the most recent podcast, some people mentioned some minor coincidence when you guys were talking about Spider and Spider Solitaire. This made me think of a gaming related coincidence I had ages ago. Thought I'd fish for any others like the gaming dreams and gaming fears questions you've had. I was playing Project Gotham 2 with a friend of mine. On one particular challenge, I happened to finish the course in 2 minutes and 22 seconds. In addition to this, I just happened to have racked up 2,222 kudos, the points rewarded for style in that series. Amused by this mild coincidence and realizing it was quite late, I said to my friends, "Ha! What are the chances of it being 22 past 2 right now?" I looked at my watch, and lo and behold, it was 1:38 a.m. There was a moment's pause before I realized it was 22:22, and time had one-upped my suggestion. So that was forever remembered by me as the Night of Twos.
Wow.
Jesus.
22:22 is goddamn epic.
Yeah.
So anyway, he asks, have any of you guys or any of your readers have had any weird coincidences while playing a game? Witty conclusion, Lawrence. That was goddamn amazing. So yeah. If anyone has anything like that, that'd be cool. Let's see here. Okay, this is just yesterday, actually. Someone sent in the our last dream. John Jackson writes, I had a dream about video games last night, and I heard you guys like these kinds of things, so here's how it went. I started playing Descent 2, or maybe 1 since they look the same, and flew around shooting up robots like I normally would. After a while, I stumbled into a bar. The bartender was one of the random NBC robots, but wearing a tie, and Guidebot was hanging out with some other spaceships having some drinks. I hung out there for a while, had myself a good time, but not after boarding up the door so the evil robots couldn't get in. After a few drinks, I suddenly realized my mission was to blow up the mine, so I told my new acquaintance that I had to go do that. They didn't take this too well, and it turns out one of them was the level boss, so he unloaded a few dozen missiles at me. I held down my trigger to fire back, and we just duked it out like that, trying to outlast each other. For some reason, he would turn into a big version of whatever weapon I shot at him, weird. But anyway, I eventually killed him, and the mine exploded with me in it. Then I watched a cutscene showing an almost dead me climbing out of a destroyed mine. I like that in a dream, yeah, he distinguishes between a cutscene and gameplay. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Hopefully his dream had the widescreen bars come down.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a second part of my dream, although it didn't have anything to do with video games. Why not? I went to a forest one day, but was run over by a huge truck that looked like a moon rover. It was being driven by Han Solo, and he drove up a hill, which turned into a building. It turned out this was a new kind of magic vehicle that could exist in multiple parts of time at once. As he drove past me, he suddenly appeared in a photo I'd taken earlier. Then he drove to the moon, and suddenly history changed, and he ran over Neil Armstrong. This is like Red Alert, but weirder.
Oh, that's good.
It turned out that Han Solo was on a secret assassination mission for Darth Vader. Some other stuff happened, but I don't remember it all. If you're still reading this, then thanks for being patient with my strange ramblings. I'm not sure exactly why I'm sending this to you, but I hope you enjoyed it in some way, John.
I did enjoy.
That's great.
I like
that's
the
like
image
when a five-year-old
being run
is like playing with like Han Solo and Darth Vader figures.
And then he went to the
moon. Like, and then he went to a moon. Like,
but he wasn't on a secret assassination mission to kill Neil Armstrong. Maybe some five-year-old.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Sent by Darth Vader. I love that. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yep. So is that our dreams?
That's a dream. Someone writes in about sort of the dreamlike state of Martian Chronicles, which is cool, but
we can read that next week.
We can read that next week. It's a good email, though. So.
Oh, we have a couple things, right?
Do we
need to tell people that to look on the blog.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you go to idlethumbs.net, if you haven't already,
we have a blog.
There's a blog there, and on it, I put a write-up of the Idle Thumbs PAX meetup, including a bunch of pictures. Crappy cell phone pictures, but pictures nonetheless. Which is cool. You can actually see that we're not bullshitting you. There were a whole bunch, dozens of people there. That was pretty rad.
Yeah.
We have a blog.
Oh, yeah. Right. We have a blog.
What else, Nick?
Did we ever mention the guy who drew that amazing picture?
Oh, my God. I don't know if we did.
I don't think we ever did. And I just feel like we should give him a shout out.
Yep.
Well, we met him at the meet.
Yep.
And he gave us the original copy of this amazing a picture of us, three of us.
It's a drawing of the three of our heads inside the body of a wizard who is sort of
dreaming of Molyneux.
He's dreaming of a giant Peter Molyneux head while sort of striding majestically through a piece of white paper.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. He sent it to us out of the blue.
Yep. And then, I have it in my bag, and we will frame it and sit it next to where we record Idle Thumbs, meaning that when we all stop doing this, Chris will just sort of, through cunning and us forgetting, end up inevitably claiming this illustration for his own.
Right. Yeah.
Well, what?
Unless I remember to steal it.
Oh.
Before
well,
you get your mitts
it,
on
don't
it.
You?
Yeah, but once I bring it here and set it in your apartment, it's basically yours.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Until I steal it from you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll steal it from each other for a while. So anyway, awesome job to Lars Brown on that. Yeah. That was goddamn amazing. It looks really cool. We should put the... He did send us a scan of it.
Right.
So we should put that up on the blog.
Yeah we should.
It's amazing. He actually found what we really look like instead of the increasingly surreal images people keep inventing for Jake.
I know.
Jake has so far appeared as... Right. A number of things, including but not limited to Big Bird and Max Headroom.
Yeah.
This is how people think of Jake on the internet.
I think of Jake as Max Headroom.
I like that there's something about the things you say that makes people just think of insanity.
Yeah that's when weird. You one time were represented as Saruman with an electric guitar, though.
Yeah, but that's rad. Yeah. So, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I wish I was Saruman with an electric guitar.
Is there more?
Well, also, on a related note... this is really unrelated, actually.
Okay, well, on a note.
Yeah, on a note, you can track the distillation of PC gaming by looking Peter Molyneux's career. That's just...
That needs more introduction.
I suppose
Nick
it needs more.
Nick made the most brilliant observation I've ever heard in my life in the hotel, but it's not...
Well, we gotta talk about this really quick right now.
A longer discussion.
Maybe we shouldn't talk about it.
Well, maybe we'll save that one for next week.
I thought of Peter Molyneux. I was going to completely forget that, and then I remembered it. And I thought,
because he was in the wizard image. Yeah.
All right, well, let's leave ourselves a note to open with that next week.
To be continued.
All right, we'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks for putting up with 1,000 casts from us this week, and a long one now.
Yeah.
So I guess that's it.
All right.
Yeah. Do any of you guys actually still have your Dreamcast plugged in?
Video game.
You guys are just in here for just a regular tap out, presumably. All right. Would you mind if we all had everyone yell a couple words into a microphone really quickly? Okay. Sorry.
Sorry about that.
No, it's all right.
Thanks.
Hey, do your thing. Have a good time, right?
Thanks. Sorry to bother you guys.
So this is the kind of dumb shit that we're making up right now.
Is
so.
It a longer lingering wizard or just yelling?
Probably not. Whatever. Don't worry about it.
Let's get a blue in there. One,
we're famous!
Two, three. Boom!
Oh, yeah. Do you guys want to try making the bird noise? Is that, I don't know, is that a horrible idea?
That sounds like ambient.
All right, thanks.
I'm the happiest person in the world now.
So we're recording that? Okay, good.
All right, guys, thanks a lot.
It's September 10th, 2009.
And I'm Mike Brecken.
That's not. Don't do that.
You guys were cracking up at the turd segment.
I know, well, because there was a point where you stopped saying turd. It started saying turret, but my mind was inserting turd.
I know.
You're shooting turd.
I was so
turrets.
Happy.
Shooting the turret out.
I knew you guys were like, doing what the fuck? That's why the final time I said turd again.